Real quick, thank you everybody for being here. You might notice I have a special guest on the podcast if you took the time to read the title of the episode. You will see that Amy is back for the third time?
Fourth? No, second time. I've only been on your podcast.
Are you sure? Yes. See, I get mixed up which is yours and which is mine, but it's okay. Amy's back. So I haven't quite decided yet if I'm going to put out an Easter episode. We're recording this before Easter, but I wanted to take the entire month of April, and we're going to do an apologetic series, basically. So if you don't know, Amy and I have a normal, like, flip-flopping series that we do where 1 month I'll be on her podcast and we'll just talk about some random topic, and then 1 month she'll be on my podcast and we'll talk about some random topic. So I wanted this month to be apologetics. Yeah, we do have that. So definitely check that out. If you haven't subscribed to Amy's podcast yet, what the matter with you? You got stuff to do.
Hop on it.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty fun. Some of the episodes are hilarious, like your unpopular opinions. I have got to do that with you. I have so many unpopular opinions, as you know, considering the fact that we got into about a 20-minute debate about whether or not the first Mulan is good. Spoiler alert, it's not.
It is good.
It is not. Good. It's so bad. It's bad. The only good part is Mushu, and he's even like mediocre.
Yes, Mushu is the best part. Mushu. Have you seen, there's like some meme out there that's like, someone's screen pot like paused it at just the right moment, and like it was just like he pulled her shirt or something like that, and they were like, the whole movie would have been a lot shorter if he just looked down. That needs to get cut out. I'm so sorry.
First off, this is staying in because I want this sharp switch between this and what's coming next. But anyways, y'all know that Amy and I tend to talk, so just, you know, strap in. Put your helmets on. This is going to be a rough ride, and it's going to be about an hour, but we got this. Anyways, first off, let me cover my Mulan thing before we get done with this. One,
no!
She would have been found out in the first 5 minutes. Her facial structure is different. I don't care how much she tries to talk like
oh
a man.
My goodness.
You're going to tell. And then do you know how heavy those swords and spears were? There is no way that frail little girl who is about the width of my pinky finger is going to be picking up and slinging those swords around with the men. First battle, she's dead, okay? Dead. Training accident, something. She's not making it. There's no way. That whole movie should have been over 5 minutes in. Y'all can't see this, but the look of death that Amy just gave me was like, should I say something?
Y'all, he has moved into uncharted territory.
I'm poking the bear right now. This is
you're poking. Yeah,
this is
I was in the best mood, and then...
You're going to keep annoying me. Gosh darn
it. No, absolutely not. You're not allowed to do that. Mushu's the best part of the movie. Have you read some of the lines? The script in that movie is amazing.
Yes, it's okay. It's just Mushu.
The concept is not there, maybe. But the lines... Come on.
Listen, this is like when your dog eats a piece of jewelry. It's a pile of crap, but you still got to dig through it to find the diamond in there.
What the heck?
You weren't expecting that, were you?
No, I wasn't. I don't think your listeners were either.
All right, everyone. So hell and eternal damnation. That's today's topic.
Let's go.
We can do this. All right. Serious time. So anyways, yes, I wanted to do an apologetic series. So if you follow me on Instagram, which if you don't, get on that too. And also follow Amy as well. She's pretty awesome. I basically put up a question sticker that was like, what are your best arguments against God? Or the ones that you hear the most or find the most convincing? And by far the one I got the most was the problem of pain, the problem of evil, the problem of suffering, whatever you want to call it. It goes by different names. Basically, it goes like this. If God is all good, why does he allow bad things to happen? Or why do bad things happen to good people? Why is there death and destruction in the world, even if it's not caused by a person harming, like earthquakes, tornadoes, hurricanes, all those things, you know, cause destruction? Why does a good and merciful God and all of this allow such bad things to take place? So Amy and I were kind of talking about it. And I thought this was going to be our one episode. And I was like, no, we could do a good 4 episodes on this. So that's what we decided to do. So this is the first one. And the first thing I kind of wanted to cover with that topic is really we have to understand good and evil kind of in their holes. W-H-O-L-E, not like in their holes like the movie. In like exactly what they are. And then heaven and hell, I think, is a really complex idea that people, especially irreligious people, have trouble with. Because I've heard this before is, if God is so good, why does he send people to hell? And ultimately, I think the biggest thing is free will. We have free will. We've been given free will. And ultimately, hell, damnation, that's something we choose. So that's getting the snowball rolling. Amy, your thoughts.
Okay. So when Grayson told me that he wanted to do apologetics, which is actually like one of my literally favorite things in the world to do, I told him that you kind of have to approach it almost as if you're putting the argument on trial and you're the lawyer. And so going with that theme, I do have a first opening statement that I think we should probably just say before we really dive in. And it's a request for the listeners to check themselves. Because if you're listening to this with the idea like, okay, I'm going to shoot down their arguments. I want to, you know, they're wrong. I'm going to find the holes in like everything in, that they're saying. If you're walking into this episode with that mentality, you're not going to get anything out of this episode. I'm not going to tell you to like stop listening, but I'm just telling you, like, you're not going to get much of anything out. Because, you know, they say knowledge is the enemy of learning. The idea that you know it all is going to prevent you from learning and hearing different perspectives. And so I think I just want to bring that to light. I'm going to ask you to leave your ego at the door. We don't have all the answers, but you don't either. So get off the high horse and we'll approach this on the same level. That's the end of the opening statements. You can cut that out if you think I came on too strong.
No. I like that. That's perfect.
So, yes, going off of what you said, it's this idea that people really, really can't get behind that God sends people to hell, like a good God for some sin. God will send you to an eternal place of torment, but this same God loves you. And people just can't get behind that. So I think we need to kind of start with some ground rules. So whether or not you're an atheist, agnostic, new Christian, whatever, we need to like kind of start with a baseline. And the fact of the matter is that when asking the question, does something, whether that's God or just some being, whether or not that exists, that's a yes or no question. Either there is something or there's not something. And we believe that there is a God, mainly because of the idea of right and wrong. If right and wrong exist, then we must measure it somehow. Not by ourselves. Not by ourselves. It can't be measured by society. So there has to be something outside of ourselves, outside of this world that measures good and evil. Take a look at the, you know, abortion argument. A lot of people can agree that abortion is wrong. But if you think that right and wrong can be measured by the individual, then the abortion argument becomes invalid because people who get abortions or people who stand behind it think that it's okay in their world when it's clearly not. Society backs up abortion too. So you can't measure good and evil by what society thinks either. So there's got to be something outside, which is a whole different episode we can go on, but we're not going to. So we've built somewhat of a foundation. Something has to exist. But the hang-up is that an all-good God, which is what Christians believe in, sends people to hell. Like, that's so hard for people to understand. How could an all-good God send good people to hell? It's very simple, because a good God, this good God, gave us the ability to freely love. You cannot truly love if you do not have free will. And he wants us to be able to love. But with that ability to freely love comes the, I can't think of the word, but like we also have the ability to freely hate. So in response to God does not choose
hell. Maybe you have the capacity for great love, but you can either love good things or you can love evil. So you and I were talking a little bit about this yesterday, which is we were talking about, like, is religion, like, is the church a cult? And so I was saying, yeah, it's a cult. Because if you look at the definition of cult, it's just people that all believe certain things and they live their lives according to certain ideals. However, Christianity, in our view, is a good cult. There are bad cults, like the cult of, like, you know, the random, like, David Koresh's cult or the Charles Manson. Like, those are still cults. Cult and culture come from the same root word. So they're still cults, but what that cult or culture worships determines whether it is good or evil. So it's not as in it's subjective. There is an objective. Is this worshiping or leading you towards something good or leading you towards something evil? So real quick, before we get into good and evil a little bit, this episode is going to be purely based on the Christian God, basically, as in proving the Christian God. There's a whole different way to prove that a God or a creator is responsible for the universe. And that's going to be next week's episode. So that's when we're going to get into creationism, some hangups that people have with the Genesis story and all of that. But specifically in this one, because it's the argument I see the most, and because most people in at least the West are familiar with the idea of the Christian God, they get that hangup of, well, if God is so good, why doesn't he just not send us to hell? And so I think the biggest thing is, I mentioned at the start of the episode, hell is something that we choose. And Amy touched on it there of we have the capacity to love because we have free will. Force is not love. Force is not good. Force is not something that is righteous. To freely choose the good, that is what we are called to do, but it's also something we must cultivate within ourselves. And it's something we fail at a lot. So,
The thing is, God does not choose hell for us. We choose it for ourselves.
Exactly. It's not so much as he chooses to send us there. We are judged by our actions, but that's a little different. It's more so he opens the door and we still choose to go the other way. We still choose the wrong idea.
Yeah, we build our own hell. The sins that make life so miserable, like greed, selfishness, and revenge, like those are just some of the things that make life like hellish, like literally hellish. I think people immediately think, because of some of the descriptions, that hell is this place of fire. It's this place of pain. It's this place of, you know, whatever. And we don't necessarily know, but what we do know is that hell is literally this separation from God forever by our own free choice. That is what it ultimately is. And Trent Horn, he's a really, really good apologetic speaker. He had this line that really got to me. He's like, in hell, sinners will eternally receive the one thing they cared most about in life, themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good way of putting it. One of the things I wanted to focus on is a lot of the things that we tend to think that, oh, well, I'm so good, I deserve, you know, eternal, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The argument of, well, why does God allow bad things to happen to good people? Meaning that those people that have done good, or what society views as good, have bad things happen to them, or have, you know, have suffering in their lives, that we are somehow owed some kind of comfort or some kind of good. We're not owed that. We as humans are broken. We have set ourselves apart from God in the sense that, you know, our sin makes us separate. And what am I trying to say here? I'm just searching for the words.
Well, I'm just going to jump in, because I think another argument that you hear a lot is, like, it's unfair for God to give punishment eternally to someone. You know, they should have the chance to, you know, hell shouldn't be eternal. It should be like temporary. People should have the chance to work, you know, work it out and like get better. And it's like, no, that chance is now. That's what life is. We have the chance to do better now, today. Like, this is our chance. And I think a kind of simple way that I was thinking about is, like, if you take a look at a teacher, a good teacher in a classroom would give their students a chance to achieve an A and succeed in the course. However, if the student does not apply themselves, they will not get an A. It's pretty simple as that. I've heard the argument like, oh, no, like God should always like let people, you know, be in heaven, but like they just need to, you know, work themselves out there. And it's like, no, if you take a, like just using logic, if a teacher gave a student an A from like the minute they walked into class, why should the student work? Why would they work?
If it's something that you're just going to be given mm-hmm. without any sacrifice, I'll say, then it's worth nothing. Yeah. If we lived our lives knowing that we were going to heaven no matter what we did on earth, then it's worth nothing and our lives would be even more worthless.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say then we kind of become it. We lose our ability to do good. In that situation, yeah. Anything goes and we don't like in that situation, Hitler wouldn't be wrong. In that situation, the rapist wouldn't be wrong because they've already got salvation. And so nothing they do matters, but it clearly does. Both of those men or both of the whatever, both of those actions are wrong. So mm-hmm. sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah, no, you're good. I was just going to say, going back to the main idea of the question of, it's not fair. So first thing, we're not deserving of comfort. We're not deserving of salvation. It was a gift freely given to us out of mercy because our sin separates us. And I think that's because people, especially people who maybe don't understand the fact that they haven't been brought up in the church or anything, where they aren't comfortable with the fact that in some way we all fall short of the glory of God and have wronged him in some way. And our sin, the sin that we're all guilty of, makes us separate and therefore undeserving. And however, he gave us that gift, that sacrifice, that salvation that was offered through Christ that we have to freely accept and then work to improve our lives and try to get better in the process. I mean, knowing that we're never going to fully be perfect, it's that constant pursuit and constant seeking of change.
Mm-hmm.
And then one idea I want you to touch on a little bit later is something that I've been learning a lot about, and it's not necessarily very big in the Protestant idea, but it's a little bit more prominent in Catholicism, which is purgatory, which is basically like a time of atonement. And
mm-hmm.
you kind of have to have this second waiting period of, okay, now I have this middle ground where I have to pay the debt for all of my sins that I committed while on earth before I can basically be cleansed of my sin. You know, I'm still new and learning about it. So Amy, I'm going to let Amy go a little bit deeper in on that. But I think that's a very important topic to think about, is that
it's a hopeful one.
It's hopeful, but people talk about how could a compassionate and loving God send people to hell? First off, we've covered the fact that it's not being sent.
You're choosing.
But it's also not loving or compassion to be unjust. If we were not held accountable for the things that we've done, if God did not have a set of standards, if God was not just, if he was not justice, then he would not be a loving and merciful God. Let's take examples on earth. This is one reason why I'm for the death penalty for crimes like murder and rape, because those crimes are so heinous for the people against whom they were committed that it is just to hold the person accountable with such a harsh penalty. And it is unjust to withhold such a penalty from that person. So by withholding justice, you actually are being cruel. By withholding justice, you are doing something that is wrong. So part of what makes God good is the fact that he is just, the fact that he is fair in the way that he judges us, but also merciful in the offerings that he gives us at the end. However, we can freely choose not to accept that mercy, but he still has to be just and he has to rule and judge as the greatest judge, as the greatest ruler does.
Yeah. I mean, I'd also add, like, people say, like, how could a compassionate, you know, God send quote unquote good people to hell or something like that, the normal everyday person to hell? And it's like, well, what even constitutes the idea of a, like, what constitutes a good person? It's easy for individuals to create their own standard of what makes a good person, because you know what? We always mold the standards to include ourselves. But we can't do that. So, which is why we have God, because he creates the standards. You know, he tells us that we have to be perfect as our Heavenly Father is perfect. Like, he's not saying you have to just do your best. He's saying, no, you have to be perfect. You have to strive for that perfection. He's not, you know, he's not calling us to just create our own rules of what works. Because if that were the case, then, you know, in the twisted mind of a rapist, what he's doing is good. What he's doing is just. In the twisted mind of, you know, the abortion doctors, that's what they're doing is fine. They're helping people. And so you see how tricky and slippery the slope. I mean, you've heard, I don't know if this is an actual saying, but that the road to hell is very wide because it's so easy.
And paved with good intentions. Mm-hmm.
It's so easy to slip into the thinking like, no, like I'm okay. Like I'm good. Like this is, I'm good to go for now. It's like, no, we're not necessarily guaranteed that. We're not, which is a very sobering thought, but the fact of the matter is we still have a chance. Like every day we wake up, every day we open our eyes, every morning we breathe, you know, a breath of air. We have that chance and the choice to do good. You know, when I was younger, I was told that every choice you make is either bringing you closer or further away to God. And, you know, definitely take and apply because your lunch choice isn't going to bring you closer. It may. Anyways, but it's just a very important thing to think about.
If it's meat on Fridays, better not go out to a steakhouse, kids.
But it's just important to think about, like, where are you coming from? What's going on in your heart and how is that coming out in your actions? Because actions speak louder than words. Like what's going on in your heart is going to show up in the way you act, the way you treat people, the way you speak to others. And that all gets accounted for.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that I want to touch on that you said is there's not one person like that wakes up in the morning and thinks, I'm going to do evil today. Everybody in their own life thinks that they are the good one. You're the main character in your own life.
Yeah.
You are the protagonist, meaning you root for yourself. Mm-hmm. You want to have noble intentions. I mean, you know, Hitler, Stalin, Mao, as corrupted as they were, they had noble intentions. Even if the intention was just, if I'm the one that grabs power, I can do good or whatever. You know, people think that they create noble goals, but this gets to a point of like, every aspect of our lives really is infected in some sense with sin. And it's a constant trying to get out of that. That makes us, that is what we're called to do and driven to do. But, you know, in the Bible, it says, no one is good, not one, no one. And then St. Paul says, the evil that I don't wish to do, I continue to do. And the good that I wish to do, I cannot make myself do. You know, there's things that we fail at. And we're held accountable for those things. We absolutely are. But we're also offered the gift of salvation. We're offered mercy and we're offered grace. But again, we can shun that. However, so this is where I want you, Amy, to get into the idea of purgatory is by accepting that gift of mercy and grace, that doesn't mean you're still not held accountable. You still don't have to atone for your sins.
Mm-hmm. So the idea of purgatory is that, I want to make sure I word this right. So hell is when you choose separation from God. It's a choice. You do make that choice. Purgatory is for the people who are still sinners, but want to be with God. So actually, when people say like, hell shouldn't be eternal, like that's horrible, whatever, like people should work themselves out. That's actually what purgatory is. So it's the people who yearn to be with God, but fall short. And so, I mean, I want to be kind of careful because I'm kind of walking into unknown territory. Purgatory. So, okay, Let's see. I'm trying to think of like a very understandable way to explain this to people.
So hold on real quick. Where I kind of discovered the idea of purgatory was, if y'all haven't read, the listeners, if y'all haven't read Dante's Divine Comedy, most people are familiar with the Inferno and the Nine Circles of Hell, but it's three different books. It is Inferno, Purgatorio, and Paradiso. So Inferno, Purgatory, and Paradise. And so in the Inferno, Dante is led through hell by the poet Virgil. And basically he's led from the top level of hell all the way down to the bottom where Satan is. And you see and hear, and he describes all of this suffering and all this mayhem that these people who have lived, some of them noble lives, like the hero Achilles, Homer, these great thinkers like Socrates and Aristotle, that were, you know, quote, good people, but they weren't in communion with God.
Mm-hmm.
They're there. They are, in a sense, suffering in some way because they are in hell. And what happens when Dante gets to the bottom of hell? He goes through the very base floor of hell. And in purgatory, the second part of the Divine Comedy, he comes up and now he is in the bottom of the land of purgatory. And so instead of going down, he now has to go back up. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a reverse, it's almost like a triangle. So it's like an upside down triangle. He goes all the way down the levels of hell. And it's the same starting point, and he walks back up. And as I was reading Purgatory, I was struck by how similar some of the situations he describes. Like, there's one situation he describes basically where these people are face down and covered in mud, and they're almost suffocating. I forget exactly what sin or something they're having to atone for. But they're basically atoning for it, and he's asking them what's going on. And here's the thing. The poet Virgil, so Virgil, if you don't know, was a Roman poet who wrote a bunch of plays and stories. And he's leading him through hell. He's leading, because Virgil is in hell. He's leading him through hell, and he's leading him through purgatory. Virgil, a man who was not in communion with God during his life, is leading Dante through hell. And he leads him all the way through purgatory. But then when they get to the edge of purgatory into heaven, Virgil says, "Now I must leave you. I can't accompany you." So that tells you something about what purgatory is. But there's a distinct difference that Dante notes in purgatory versus in Inferno, is that the people in purgatory have hope because they understand that the suffering they are enduring at the moment is finite. Mm-hmm. It's something that they must endure to atone for the wrong that they've done in their lives. And there are people there that he passes by that have done almost similar or exactly the same things as people who were in hell. But they reached and accepted that gift of mercy, that gift of salvation, but they still must atone for their crimes, basically. They must have their just punishment in order to cleanse themselves of their sin to be fully in full communion with God at the end in heaven.
Yeah. Just wanted to do a little side note so that we don't have any misunderstanding, is you cannot cross over from hell into purgatory. So if you do...
Yeah. No. That was part of the story that Dante did. Yeah, that was Dante's storytelling, because Dante, in the Divine Comedy, he's not dead. He's basically dreaming, and God is giving him an opportunity to see all the levels of the afterlife. So Dante gets led from hell into purgatory, but the people in hell...
They cannot cross
Virgil
over.
Virgil is basically given like, hey, you... But Virgil has to go back to hell. But like Dante is just seeing it. But the point I was trying to bring there is like, they're almost inverses of one another. They're inverses. One leads down while the other leads upward. So that's, yeah, I just thought that was an interesting idea. And that kind of set me off on a whole rabbit hole that I will not get into here.
Yeah. So purgatory is pretty much the idea that there are people who want to be in communion of God, but they're not ready. So if you take a look at the parable of the... oh my goodness, the word is literally flying out of my brain. It's the parable of the people with the lamps and the bridegroom. I can't think of the name of what they're called, but it's...
Is this the one with the wineskins?
No. It's the one where there's a party and there were... I'm just going to say maidens, but I know that's wrong. But maidens, there were 9 virgins. I think it was virgins.
Yeah, well, a maiden is
okay,
a virgin.
Okay, whatever. Anyways, don't yell at me. And they brought their lamps and they brought extra oil because, and then there were the seven. Yeah, whatever.
Okay,
and
that's right. The ones that didn't bring oil. They were asking the ones with oil for extra oil.
Yeah, so it's this idea that you need to prepare yourself. And so, actually, that was the wrong story. It's the one where I'm all over the place.
Jeez, Amy.
It's the one where it has to do with the bridegroom, and they're not dressed for a event. And so purgatory is pretty much end of the story. Purgatory is basically that period of time where you prepare yourself to come into full communion with God. It is that you yearn for that communion, but you still are a horrible sinner and you need to atone for it. So I think Dante even goes through like some of the sins and like some of the people who are being forced to kind of live out their sins in a very extreme way for that atonement. So that's what purgatory is. Purgatory also does not have a set time. There are people in purgatory who, I mean, the concept, we don't know this for sure, but it's said that there are people who, you know, would have died maybe back in Jesus's time, and they will be in purgatory till the end of time. So it's just this, it's horrible in some ways because it's perpetual waiting, but at the same time, there's hope at the end of it. So at Last Judgment, when that arrives, the people in purgatory will be allowed into heaven. The people in hell will not. So
yeah, well, that's what it says. Those who sleep in Christ are the first ones to be invited in. So you can take that as those who are asleep, they're not fully there yet. They're waiting. They're asleep. They're going to be the first ones to rise and join at the second coming.
Well, yeah. I mean, something that I've always been taught in different, you know, youth groups is that I think it's for gold. In order to shape gold or something, you have to put an immense amount of pressure on it in the same way.
Diamond.
Oh, diamond. Okay, there you go.
Coal turns into diamond. Oh, I realized what I was going to mention. There's a reason that the church is always referred to as the bride of Christ, because the wedding idea, I think, is very profound, especially in this idea when it comes to purgatory, is there is a period like right before where you're separate, but you know the date's there. It's like it's a week away, but that week or a month, or there's certain ceremony, especially at the time of Christ, there was like ceremonial things people would do before weddings. They would cleanse themselves. They would become more pure, like, so they would be clean, they would put on their finest clothes, they would, you know, eat clean food, they would fast, they would do all these things to make sure they were the most spiritually pure they could before they came into their marriage. And when we think about that idea with Christ and with purgatory, is we are the bride, we are the church is the bride,
the beloved
of Christ. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're the beloved, and there's a reason that we're, you know, I forget exactly where it is, but it's basically like there was an idea that the maidens of the bride were to protect the bride's virginity, basically, until the wedding day. And that's kind of the same idea, is we protect our own and the church and our fellow believers. We protect their spirit. We protect, and we kind of go together and we prepare in a sense. And you do that in life, but then in death, there also is that time that you have to spend in purgatory doing that cleansing process. So it's just kind of a different idea. But that imagery of the church being the bride, I think, is very apt here. We are getting off on a random tangent.
We are.
Do you think that covered? Do you have anything else to add with purgatory and stuff?
No, I don't. I mean, that's the basic, basic concept. If people have questions, please reach out
to Amy. Don't reach out to me. So one thing I've been thinking about recently is this idea of I'll say naturalistic suffering. So the suffering that comes from just flooding, tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes, fires, storms, all this stuff that, you know, we don't have control over. Like, I didn't kill anybody. I didn't do anything wrong. No one came and oppressed me. It's just the weather. It's just the world.
I'm sorry. That was really funny. It's just the weather.
It's just the weather.
It's just the weather. Okay, sorry. Anyways.
It's sweater weather. So one thing that I was kind of thinking of is I was going back through and reading the Genesis story. And one of the things is like the whole world kind of was infected with sin and brokenness and evil when man fell. The whole world. The world was perfect as God intended it to be before the fall of man. And I'm of the belief that that included naturalism, like that included the weather. Like there probably wasn't the harshness and strife that we experience now. And our sin, in a sense, is like that separation means that even the physical earth is not the physical earth that God intended it to be upon creation. So our sin resulted in a further ripple effect and a further reach than we could ever imagine into the physical body of the world. And that suffering, like earth, the earth literally breaking with earthquakes and things like that, that is not how God intended the earth to be. That is not how God intended us to live on this land that he created. But our sin causing him to no longer be able to dwell among us because we separated ourselves from him of our own free will by our act of sin. That means that the physical earth as well is now no longer perfect as he intended it to be. It is broken. So to those people who say, well, it may be person to person suffering, that's free will, I can get behind that, but how come a good God allows, you know, earthquakes to happen to people in, you know, Houston and Puerto Rico and Haiti where, you know, it's just going to destroy them? Well, he doesn't make it happen. It's just a result of the separation that we have from him.
Well, also, it's like, you know, evil does not come from God. Evil comes from the world we've made. Yeah. It comes from the world we've made of the world that God made. So, and also, yeah, I just wanted to touch on your point because I had read the other day, like, Adam was perfection. He, like, had God's grace and he fell. He who had, like, Adam had everything and he still chose separation from God. So it's not a matter of like, you deserve this, you're a good person. No, like the perfect person fell. So it's way easier for us to fall as well.
Yeah.
And then back to your point of that, you know, natural evils and things like that. It's important for the listeners to understand that God never willed. He doesn't will evil. But he has to allow for the possibility of it because he wants us to be able to love freely.
This question I got was, if God is all good, then why does he A, allow evil, B, do evil? So it's that B point that I think you're touching on. God does not will. God does not do evil.
We do.
Evil happens because we do it. What God allows is free will. And I've touched on this in podcasts before. God, the all perfect, all good, all knowing, merciful, all of that, that you are taking, that this person who's asking this question is having a problem with in this problem of suffering. He knows that it is better for us to have freedom because even Adam had free will, because only through free will can we completely choose to love. And love is only good and valuable if it is of free will. God created us to be free. That freedom also gives us the chance to fall and do evil. But God does not will us to do that evil. God does not will evil of his own action. Mm-hmm. Evil is something that exists.
As a result.
God is the it exists as a result of our separation. It exists as a result of free will. Now, this is a question that I don't really have an answer. Well, I kind of have an answer for it. Does God have the capacity to do evil, but he just doesn't?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. Hold on. Let me think about that.
So my initial reaction was no. But as I've thought about it, I'm thinking the answer is yes, because God knows all. Therefore, he can know evil, but not do evil, not will.
Well, here's the thing is like we think of evil because we don't know the future.
Yeah.
We look at something like COVID and we think that's evil. Like it's screwed up our lives. We've missed a whole year of, you know, doing whatever it is we could do. It's miserable. People are dying. It's horrible. But what if we find out that people were brought closer to God because of it? What if we found out that people became stronger in who they were meant to be because of it? What if we found out that families grew together and became stronger because of it? You see, what the heck? Sorry, Grayson is literally...
I'm fixing my stuff.
Okay, sorry. Okay, no, little side note. Grayson is the most distracting co-host in the friggin'
world. I am not. That is a lie.
He is. He'll straight up leave. I think the last podcast we did, you left, and I was like...
I had to get my phone charger. My phone was dying. Did you want us to end in... Amy?
You'll play with your equipment, and I'll be like, what the heck is going on over there?
Listen, my ADHD does not allow me to sit still. You just have to put up with this, all right?
I'm, like, looking around his apartment because he's moving his phone. I'm, like, getting a tour. Anyways... I don't even...
It's not that much. You've seen the entire place. Yeah, so.
Anyways. So what we may think of as evil may be something that's actually going to make us better. You know, even though it's really, really hard to understand. And this concept is like, it's... we're walking a fine line here because God allows certain things to happen for the betterment of us. You know? Imagine, okay.
Which was not necessary in the garden or in paradise at the beginning when man was free from sin, mm-hmm. when man had not chosen sin yet. There was no need for God to cause drastic situations, or let's say he causes those. There was no need for that to be a thing because Adam didn't need to grow in his faith towards God. He walked in the garden with God. Yeah. There was no need for him to grow closer. He was as close as you could get. Without physically being God. So, I mean, this also brings us to another question is like, are naturalistic events evil? Like, is an earthquake evil? Well, we might view it as that, but is it evil?
Well, we may view it as something that's like upsetting. But what is
it? Yeah, but is it evil?
That's a whole other thing too.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're getting off into the weeds here. But,
well, no more than usual.
That's true. Like... We should just, like, one day conglomerate all the topics that we've ever talked about, but, like, put it in succession and just, like, see how far we deviate on each point. Because it's – we're like ping pong balls at a certain – ding, 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 ding.
Well, no. And then now and then one ping pong ball will go, like, straight in the opposite direction. We have to go chase after – yeah.
Boom.
Yeah. Anyway. So, yes, that's a really good point. That evil, you know – I mean, this is a whole different podcast, but like, what even is evil? Like, you know, you look at, I mean, this is getting a little more serious, but you look at, okay, here, you get a little personal. So, I am from a very large family. I'm from a family of six, but there was a seventh. And so that was she would have been the third child, and she died of cancer at two. So people would look at that and they'd say, you know, why would that happen to that family? That family is a young family. They should, you know, whatever. They need to – that's a bad thing. They don't deserve that. Whatever, whatever, whatever. And I'm not saying that it should happen, but I'm saying that as a consequence, my parents grew in their love together. They grew in their faith because of it. And it's like – we don't understand sometimes. My sister-in-law is, you know, lost two children in miscarriage. And you look at that and you're like, they're doing everything right. Why would they need to lose this child? Like, a child of all people is the most innocent being on earth at the time. But it's like, there are just times when you don't understand and you can take your anger out on God. Or you can pray and grow closer to him through it. He's bringing you closer to him in the events that happen in your life. And you may not necessarily understand why, but again, I think we've said this, like, it's not our job to try and decipher the future. It's not our job to try and have all the answers because we're never going to have all the answers. But our job is to trust that everything that happens for a reason, and it's our job to choose to love fiercely no matter what happens. So, yeah, I don't know if that, you know, applied at all to what we were talking about, but.
No, I think that was really good. And I think that was a perfect way to end it. Thank you, Amy.
You're welcome.
All right. So, like I said, next week we're going to be going over creation. And next week, probably more so, won't be talking about the Christian God other than the fact that we'll talk about the Genesis story. But we're more so going to talk about why it is that there must be a creator or a eternal being that exists beyond time and space, whom is responsible for the moral standards we have, the physical standards, the physical reality that we know, why there is a God, and then we'll kind of try to dig down deeper into why it is the God that it is that God that we have talked about there. So, for everyone listening, thank you for being here. Amy, thank you for enduring yet another podcast with mm-hmm. me. Y'all, if you haven't yet, please do go subscribe to Amy's podcast. It's a really awesome thing to listen to once per week. Do you put out more than one episode?
I thought about doing okay. two, and that overwhelmed me.
Two's a lot. Yeah. Yeah, trust me, two can be a lot. So definitely go check it out. Follow her on social media. Follow me on social media. If you'll have any questions, hit us up with those. We always love talking about this stuff.
If you're listening on the Apple Podcast app, make sure to rate and review this podcast because...
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Because those always help a lot. Wow.
She's so used to doing that because she is she does that for her.
Yeah.
She thinks this is her podcast. Trying to steal from my rates and reviews. No. Rate and review this podcast. Go rate and review her podcast too because it's awesome. Share it with friends as well. We always love seeing that. But yeah, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Amy. We will see you back here next week. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. The show is produced and mixed by my friend, Tim. Music by MP0. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. And if you get a chance, please leave a 5-star review on iTunes. I'd really appreciate it if you share this podcast with your friends. Be sure to follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Parler. Links for those will be in the show notes. Subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. Check out PragerForce to get a great conservative community organization. And check out Today is America. To get 15% off your purchase, use my link and the code Grayson Kemble for 15% off. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the College Kid Conversations podcast. My name is Grayson Kemble, and I will see you back here for another episode soon.